Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. And this is actually I know you guys know that it's a special time for me because I've been talking about bringing Dan McClintock on to the podcast for, I don't know, over 6 months now. And it just had to do with technical issues that we got fixed. And I'm so happy that Dan and I live in different places. He's chiming in here remotely. And Dan, welcome. First of all, let everybody hear you for the first time here.
Hey, thank you. Hey, Scott and everybody, this is Dan. I'm in Florida and Scott is in Las Vegas right now, but
Yeah.
here we
And
are.
yeah, Dan's a co-developer of KI. So I mention him quite often if you guys listen to the podcast. And there's not a, unless you follow Dan on social media, you may not know his story. And it's really just like all of our stories are relevant in the end to how we get to a place like KI or a path like KI. I want to have Dan actually give you a little bit of, so that every time I bring him back, you know a little bit of his story, enough to know why he's a co-developer and such a good friend of mine. So I'm going to ask Dan to tell us a little bit about, like, well, Dan, you and I met, I don't even remember the year. It was, I want to say 2016. I'm not sure. But can you kind of like lead us up before we met to things that we wouldn't know about you? Like, what led you even to come to me as a teacher and all that?
Yeah, sure. So, 2016 was the year, I think, for me that everything started to really hit the wall in my system. And so, I had been sort of pursuing spirituality and stuff for a couple of years doing Byron Katie's work and been in 12 step for a while and Al-Anon and other 12 step programs. And 2016, I just started to really. I look back now and I think, well, this was trauma. That was the year that trauma rose and repression started to rear its head. And so, I found the Killaby Center and I went as a client. I mean, I, well, actually, let me back up a second. I actually trained in your first modality, Scott, Living Inquiries, and I trained and then I started to and. Right in the middle of that training, that's when all the trauma and repression started to rise up. So I realized, oh, I have to stop this training and go to the center for myself just to address all that, you know. So I drove out from Florida to Palm Desert where the Killaby Center was. And I think the main thing that I was dealing with at that point was just pretty intense porn addiction. And along with anxiety and depression and all the stuff that comes along with it, but that was like the core issue for me. And so I came out as a client, and then at the end of that time, I think it was the last day, Scott, you just said to me, "Hey, would you be interested in coming to work here?" You know, and I said yes, and I came back about a month later, started working at the center, and then you and I became friends. Started playing a little bit of music together. But really, I think we started to organically kind of develop the tools, the early tools of the Killaby Inquiries. I didn't know that we were doing that at the time. I don't know if you knew either, but we were just kind of, you know, experimenting and playing together with all these ideas and in a hot tub of all places, you know.
Yeah.
But
That's amazing. And this was actually really like pretty magical time for me and you both, Dan, I think, because it was the beginning of the development of KI, but we didn't know what it was and didn't have a name for it, and the name doesn't matter. But there's so much I could talk about or ask you about, 'cause it's relevant to our topic today. So everybody who's listening, the topic, obviously by the title, is the original gaslight. And we want to explain a little bit about that because I want to take Dan a little bit back through his story to fill in some details around the original gaslight and what that means in our lives. But let me just kind of explain it in my own words, and then Dan might add some things. The original gaslight is a term that Dan coined very recently, actually, to refer to something that he and I have talked about for a long time in one way or another since we started developing this work, but especially since we started to develop the work around emotional repression. Because when you start to process buried emotions, you really do see very directly that you're gaslighting yourself, not consciously or intentionally, but we're just always doing that with buried emotions because we have to believe things, and we've always had to believe things that aren't true and that make us suffer because of these unprocessed emotions. Well, as a teacher, I didn't know that until repression inquiry was developed, that I'm sitting there gaslighting myself by believing things throughout my life from a very early age, and then actually taking even some of the non-duality on as a belief, which I'll talk about here, which again was like a way of gaslighting myself, even though my intentions might have seemed pure. I was driven by the need for safety. And what I hope that Dan will illuminate here, before we start talking about KI and what it does to help us with this gaslighting ourselves, where we just don't trust ourselves and we have to believe things, I want you to tell your story, Dan. I mean, not your whole story again, but go back through some of that. And I know, because there's so much more to it. You and I have done so much work together, and I know you so well. There's so much there we could hit. But can you hit a little bit in terms of, like, you were like a youth leader at one point. You were involved pretty deeply in different forms of 12-step, Al-Anon. And since we're talking about the original gaslight, I mean, we could even go back to childhood, right? I mean, we'll talk about it. But can you talk about, in terms of like the different things you tried before KI and how that plays into the topic of the original gaslight?
So the things that I tried to go towards for a solution is what Scott's talking about. Like, I think the first thing I tried was religion. I mean, I tried to go back to the religion of my youth, which was Christianity. I was Presbyterian, raised pretty moderate Presbyterian. And so that's where I first, once my anxiety and depression in my early 20s started to rise up, that's where I went first. I thought, well, maybe if I go, church will be the answer to this, because that's what I knew. That's what how I was conditioned. So I tried that. That didn't work. I only tried it for about 2, 3 years, probably. And that didn't work in terms of lessening my suffering, right? In terms of like the porn addiction was still there and the depression, anxiety. It didn't really touch that. There was some insights, I think, and connection stuff that happened in that paradigm, in the religious paradigm. But, I just didn't do very much. So I thought, well, I'll take it to the next level and maybe I'll try to go to 12-step programs because that's also something that my mom had been doing Al-Anon for years. My dad was actually kind of convinced by my mom to go into a sexual addiction 12-step program. So I thought, well, maybe I'll try both of what they're trying, So that was the next thing. That was the next like solution that I tried to, find was in that program, and that lasted longer because. But that really, I'll tell you what, that really like, as you know, Scott, it's like the trying to not do something, like trying to not be sexual or look at porn. That really reinforces emotional repression, right? Because, and I'll go sort of more into the past of this, but that was like almost another form. It was in tandem with my anger repression. I didn't know that at the time. But the movement of trying not to do stuff is something that I was familiar with from my earliest days,
Yeah, can I ask you about that right there? Because that's a good point to just like how we gaslight ourselves that way, just with like in so many different ways. I was listening to it, and I was thinking it's not just the 12-step program, but it's like you go back, it's like we gaslight ourselves because these addictions, we have to do these addictions because we can't feel and express these emotions. And if we could, we wouldn't have grown up that way. Or like even before you get to 12-step, some of that stuff, because I know you include that. And then I'm going to ask you one more thing and to see if this sparks something, because I know it will. Is that I want you to include how you and I have talked about this as something larger. It's like the cult of human conditioning. Like that's, we start gaslighting ourselves really early. And I know we don't want to go back out to childhood yet, but like when you say these things, I keep thinking, gosh, they do have their roots, don't they? Going back. So can you tell me, say a little bit more about just how porn addiction is gaslighting ourselves, and not just recovery, Yeah, all that along the way.
Yeah, so I'll say it this way, that when I first got to the center and you and I started talking about this, all I remember saying over and over again was, it feels like I'm programmed, and it feels like I've been taking on more and more programming, you know, like a computer, like I've just been taking on all this stuff. And you helped me see that. I think you pointed me to that. You went like, you know, because when you're in something, when you're in a gaslight or when you're in a program, you can't really see it that well because you're inside of it, you know. So you really helped me see it. And you would keep pointing to it. Look at 12 step. You have beliefs around, you know, it's not okay to be sexual, or, you know, if you do, it means this about you. It means you're a bad person, or whatever that is, you know. So.
But can I say this too? Like we were talking about sexual repression. We were developing work because I was focusing on chronic pain at that time, so everybody knows, in those hot tub nights where we're developing this work. And Dan was focusing on porn addiction. But it was very similar what we were talking about. We were talking about repression, but we hadn't gotten to the emotional repression yet. That's what I wanted to say. And we were talking about sexual repression a lot and how a lot of it was about not doing things, not being sexual. So I just wanted the audience to know that because we didn't start out talking about buried anger and we're both anger repressors. We just hadn't discovered it yet in the beginning. And I wanted to let the audience know that in the beginning of KI, there was no emotional repression.
Yeah, it develops into the emotional repression work. The only thing that you and I knew we had that we were still trying to work with was I had the big ass contraction in my lower belly, you know, my lower left side of my belly, this big just fist of a contraction down there. And you had the pain that started to come up in your spine, the spinal stenosis. Yeah. So that was like our, we didn't know that that was anger repression yet at that point. We were just sort of like examining it, going, well, what beliefs could be in this contraction, or what programs, you know, could be affecting this thing, you know?
Keep going. That brings up a lot of stuff, but keep going. Yeah, we didn't. We
Yeah.
were just feeling with beliefs at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and the thing that you did with me that nobody had done before, because of course I came through church and 12 step, as you said, like, well, why don't you go, you know, be sexual, whether that's with yourself or with somebody else or whatever it is, once you go and be sexual. And my whole system went, nope, oh my God, I like seized up, you know, and the big no came up. So you started talking to me about sexual repression, and I think that was the first time that we even like use the word repression. And I remember the first time you said it to me, I remember I asked you to repeat it like a couple times because I couldn't, my mind started fogging out, you know, around it, which is.
What that's exactly right. What it brings up for me is like we were also working with what you felt like was addiction to porn. And I think just intuitively, it was like, well, they're like extremes. If we hold sexuality back, it can easily create like you hold that lid down and then it has to come out, you know? And that's how where I was going with it, but we still hadn't connected it to buried anger. It's just interesting that we still saw it as repression, but not the buried anger.
Yeah, totally. Because you would say to me, I think your compulsion, your sexual compulsion, is due to the sexual repression. And I remember
Yeah.
that resonated, yeah.
Yeah, and I was right and wrong about that. I was like half right in a way.
Okay.
It wasn't complete, you know, it was just which is talk about like, can I just say this right now? We're talking about gaslighting ourselves and a couple of things that you've said. And I know you'll pick up on this is like in the beginning, we have to gaslight ourselves. We have to believe things to keep us safe. And we believed at a certain time that just processing certain beliefs would free us somehow. That's, or then we believe that if that it's really sexual repression only. See, we were still staying safe from the buried anger and the core fears. And I just think that's interesting how our own like a path includes these places where we land or because we have to, we have, you know, we're not conscious enough to go to the root yet that we talk about. Go anyway, go ahead. I just wanted to say that.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. Because our systems were, I guess, knowing what we know now, I look back and I go, yeah, we were both too, our systems were too scared to go towards the anger, you know? So, But yeah, so the way that I want to tie it back to childhood is this. This is why I call it the original gaslight, right? Because as a kid, it was like the original gaslight is when I start to take on beliefs really early on about myself or about the world or about other people, you know.
Yeah.
And so stuff real, you know, simple stuff like that everybody deals with, like I'm not good enough or I'm unsafe or people are out to get me or
Yeah.
I can't do it, you know, just these things that people, including myself, they take for granted, like, yeah, this is just how things are. This is my reality, you know, I'm not good
Yeah.
enough, you know.
Totally. I hope. Yeah. It's like I can't be myself. That's the gaslight. You know, whatever my authentic self is, I can't be that. And then as soon as you said that, I thought about that Radiohead song, you know, I do it to myself. As soon as you started talking about that little kid who doesn't know any better, you know, has to just start believing things. Go
Yeah,
ahead.
dude. It's yeah, and we're compelled into it. So it's like that's the original gaslight. We're walking around and we're gaslighting ourselves so that we can protect ourselves, really, and so that we can stay connected with, you know, in my case, my caregivers who were pretty unconscious people at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, so how did you do that to explain to people how you felt like you had to give in that way? Or we've talked about submitting and then, yeah, explain some of that, would you?
Yeah, so I'll explain it sort of in the context of my anger repression too, because it helps. I think it connects well. But so my parents, my dad was a guy that was sort of burst into rages every once in a while. He's real kind of shut down, but then he would rage. So as a little kid, I was really scared of that, you know. And my mom was a little bit more present with me, but she also was really angry with my dad, but couldn't show him. She's an anger repressor, so she couldn't show him. Anyways, so I developed two stories with that. So with dad, it was like for me, I have to repress my anger around dad because here's this guy that if I show any kind of power or anger or strength or anything like that, he's just a dominating force, right? Like he'll attack
Right.
and dominate, you know. And then with mom, for me, it was like if I express any anger, she's going to think that I'm like dad. You know, she's going to withhold her love because she's going to go, oh, he's just like his father. And, you know, so that was the root. And that's why I didn't know. As a kid, I had no idea this was happening. But I learned really early on to repress that anger, my anger, my power. My masculinity, my sexuality too, because that was something that she was angry with my dad about, was he's,
Yeah.
you know, sexual and she didn't like that. So
Yeah. Hey,
push that
Dan,
down too. Yeah.
I was gonna say this too because I know you so well, and I know you're explaining it really well. But when I hear your story, like, how is your sexuality connected to your power and your masculinity? If the porn addiction, can you fill the audience in a little bit more on that? I think I understand it. But
Yeah,
yeah.
sure. So for me, the way that it all kind of tied together with the porn addiction, because I found myself in the porn being drawn to watching other people, obviously watching other people have sex, but it was like watching these guys, and all the guys in porn are all, you know, well endowed and they're
Right.
having sex with these women, and it was like this hit that I got from watching that. It was like a turn on, and it was also a lot of suffering involved in it. So that tied into my, you know,
Yeah.
sexual desire. I think it happens to a lot of people. Kind of the shame or the suffering just gets tied in with that. So, anyways, and so it was just almost like a reenactment of my childhood, because in the childhood it was like I have to push myself down any of these big energies like anger, power, sexuality, masculinity. I have to push this down.
Yeah.
And, you know, and in doing so, for me, it was like you can only, especially with sexuality, you can only push that down for long enough before it starts to burst out
Right.
sideways, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take you off into that. I was like back to your childhood because I think it's important for people to hear. your
Yeah.
childhood and what you mean by gaslighting yourself, like the original, but also that it's so connected to the porn stuff that we were working on so many years later. That's all.
Totally. Totally. So, yeah, and so that's how it ma manifested the porn. It was like, so going to the porn was also, re-experiencing my childhood pain in that way. But I learned in front of mom and dad to repress the anger and all that other stuff along with it. And then I was compelled at that point, because I was pushing really my life force down, my anger and all the stuff I mentioned, that then I was compelled to start identifying with these identities or these programs that said, like, I'm unsafe, or I'm unwanted, right? And that's when I say the original gaslight, it's like that's it, because as I pushed down unknowingly, my little system pushed down all of that energy and all those emotions, and then I start to believe that
Right.
I'm unwanted. So, and so that's the what we call it in KI. We always say, when you hold back what's true, you're forced to identify with what's false.
Right.
And there I
Yeah.
was.
Exactly. I just want people to hear also that when we're pushing down anger, that's fear, you know. Let's call it what it is. But it's fear of anger. And I've had the same thing. So when you think of it that way, of course you feel unsafe, you know, as a kid. When something's so terrifying that you feel, I wanted you to say that. If you now that you've done KI, what can you say about that little kid, Dan, who was afraid of that? Anything else?
Yeah, I think, well, here's the thing that is so, that I love so much about our repression work now, is because I realized that then repression makes us think, or made me think at that point, that the source of the anxiety that I had and the shutdown was outside of me. Like, I thought I was afraid of dad, or I was afraid of these people, or I was, and come to find out, like, after doing repression work, what I was really afraid of was, like Scott said, the anger, the sort of, reservoir of stored anger that's in my body. Like, that's what was driving and causing my anxiety,
Yeah. Isn't that funny? Because remember, we were in the hot tub and we were. I just want people to hear this part too, because it was so innocent how we were. I'm sorry, I'm taking it fast forward because I know this stuff from inquiring with you in the hot tub. You know, that's all I know. I didn't know you when you were a kid. But when we first started in the hot tub, you kept saying something, and there was a lot of things that you would say. There would be like bombs that you would drop that would later on be such a part of the development of KI. And this is one of them where you said, I feel unsafe. And that's why I seek safety, but then that doesn't make me, then I just feel unsafe again. It's like a loop. Can you articulate that from a time of being a little kid somehow that you couldn't in the hot tub to me?
Yes,
Yeah.
definitely. I said that so many times to you, and I have to remember it. I would always get to, I have to be afraid, or I have to believe that I'm unsafe in order to be safe. And I just, it would be such a mind fuck. I would be like, what? I don't understand what that is, but I do now, because that's what I, as a kid, it was like, I have to believe this about myself, that I'm unsafe and that the world is dangerous and that people are out to get me. It was like, I had to believe that, so I didn't have to access what was going on in my body, and didn't have to access my buried anger and my all the other things that went along with it,
Yeah, and we didn't know that in the hot tub. We didn't know it was anger repression either.
No, yeah.
Yeah, but interesting. Okay, so what else can you say about, because there was a lot more after. How did that play out with after dad and mom? And you can talk, can you say a little bit about codependency? Because you've been talking about that on social media, and how your first glimpses of that before you had a name for it in your family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Codependency. Well, I think all three of us, frankly, were codependent with each other. It's like, I always think about it this way. And I did Al-Anon for 10 years, and they would always say, codependency is, I need you to be okay so I can be okay. And so that's kind of what it felt like in our family. It's like there was a repressed kid and there's two repressed adults. And we all need each other to stay
Yeah,
repressed,
totally.
Because when I say I need you to be okay so I can be okay, it's really like I need you to stay repressed so I can stay
Exactly.
repressed.
Yeah. So we can all be safe. Yeah. Right. But we don't know it. So I was just thinking the codependency is a kind of like, it's a gaslight in the whole family, you know? Everybody's just gaslighting themselves and each other. Is there anything else you want to say about that and your family?
Yeah, just it felt like we were all pretending for each other, you know, because we were. We were pretending. We had to pretend because of the repressed emotions. You know, we were like kind of forced to. And I mean, I don't think I realized the effect that that had until I came to the center and we started looking at it. And I just felt like, you know, I can't trust myself, you know. I
Yeah.
feel crazy. And then I went, oh, that's why. Looking back now, I'm going, that's why. It's because we were all repressed and, you know, living in pretense with each other and relating that way.
Totally. Are there any other gaslight big ones that we like? They're like there's the original one. I keep saying it's like we have to do it to ourselves, you know, like when you get right. I mean, even though because we have unconscious parents, but at the same time, it becomes our conditioning. And then we just keep doing it. So you get older and you're in this family. And I'm sure I could say, well, then where did it go? And you could have a lot of stories like with your family. But at some point with a porn addiction, you go in to 12 step. And I can share that with you and start a dialogue around that because that's its own landing and we're innocent. But a lot of times when we go into recovery, we're focusing at the surface and we're not aware of course, the buried emotions. And then the buried emotions are driving the addiction. You know, the science says we know this now. So, in 12 step, how is that related to the original gaslight being in 12 step for you or recovery programs, even?
Well, I'll tell you what it did was I remember when I first got into 12-step, I had always had this sense. Of course, I had this sense because I'd been, you know, like I said earlier, I'd been believing it at sort of an unconscious level, like that there's something wrong with me or that, you know, I'm unwanted, unsafe. But really, it was like, God, there's something wrong and I don't know what it is, right?
Yeah.
So when I first got into 12-step and they said, you're an addict, I went, there was actually
Yeah.
some relief that some
Yeah.
relief that came in because I was like, oh, that's what's going on. That's what's wrong with me. I'm an addict. That's it. And then they said, and here's the solution, right? Like you have to believe that you're an addict. Step one, you have to admit your powerlessness, basically, and believe that this is who you are, that you're an addict, so that you can get free of the addiction. And that was, frankly, that's like nail in the coffin at that point. I didn't realize, but that was like, oh shit, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you this too. I don't know if I've ever told you this, Scott, but the night that you have to read your first step out in some of these programs, like you have to read it to the whole group. And I read my first step, which was like your experience with, in my case, of sexual addiction. You have to read your sexual history, your past, and all this stuff.
Yeah.
I read that out and I remember I went home that night and I had the most terrifying nightmare I think I've ever had. And in the nightmare, I walked into the bathroom and I looked at myself in the mirror and my face, it was like falling apart. And I just remember feeling like there was rage, you know,
Oh, yeah.
happening in the dream. And I just woke up going, that was weird, you know?
Wow. All that
But
buried under that, yeah.
there it is. There it is. Because it was like, now not only did I believe that there was something wrong with me and I'm wanted, but now I've taken on this extra belief that I'm an addict and that that's who I am. So it was like, it's like
Yes.
I got buried even more in that experience, you know?
Totally. And I want to say this too. So Dan was instrumental in developing utility inquiry. And this will I have to bring this in here because, you know, like when I was in 12 step too, and I also believed it because it's like at that level of consciousness, I guess you just have to, and it keeps you safe. And, you know, but we don't know what from. You know, I thought, well, I'm safe from the addiction now. Now I know what I am. But when we developed utility inquiry, Dan basically said something like, well, no belief, nothing exists in a vacuum, nothing arises for no reason. It's just true. But the question is, But what do we get out of it, or what's creating it? And so utility inquiry got developed, which just was one of the initial tools that we had. It's not really part of the repression inquiry, but it was really important because things like I'm an addict, we would say, like, if you go into the body where the repression is, especially, you just feel into it and you say, and you really feel like I'm an addict first. You have to like kind of identify with it. And you say, but what do I get out of believing that I'm an addict? We kept asking that question early in the development of AI, KI. That's not something that you had or I had in 12 step. See, that's the thing. So we learn later that the reason that we're believing it is to stay safe. That's what came up over and over and over, no matter what the belief, really, and get love, no matter whether it was I'm an addict or I'm not good enough or I'm in whatever it is that isn't really true, because we have buried anger or buried emotions, and that's what we're actually staying safe from. That's the thing that we didn't know, Dan. And when you first, I wanted to ask you about this, when you first developed utility inquiry, neither one of us could have known where it was going, I don't think. But where it was going is to find that the actual body's answer to the question of why, because you don't want to ask the mind the question of why am I believing this, because it's too analytical. But we went into the body and we said, but what do I get out of it? And we listened to the body. There was just this consistent safety. Like, it was just telling us we're driven by fear. And then eventually we found it was really the fear of whatever we repress the most. And for you and me, it was buried anger. The reason I'm saying this is because it's so relevant when you start talking about how, believing you're an addict, and how that's relevant to what we're talking about here. I mean, in KI now these days, is that there's a reason we believe these things. So I know that's going to spark something that from that for you.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Well, that's huge. The utility thing is so, I felt like that was a turning point towards the repression when we started to develop that. Like that was like, okay, there's something here, and by the way, just as a sort of, this is funny, in 12 step, they always used to say, don't ask why, don't ask why,
Right.
just accept it. You're an addict, you have an addiction, don't ask why. And I thought to myself, well, asking why has been the key for me. Ironically, ultimately, has been the key to freedom from addiction, whether it be porn or belief or identity or whatever it is, So, yeah. So, I maybe you remember me saying this, Scott, but I was like, when we were in the hot tub a lot, I just kept going. It feels like I get clear something, and we'll do some inquiry and. Just some basic inquiry and look at beliefs. And then the next day, the suffering kicks back in. I remember saying a number of times, like, it feels like my system's addicted to the suffering state. Like, I have to,
Right.
it's not okay to not suffer. It feels too,
Yeah.
foreign or scary or something,
Yeah. But see how unconscious it was till we're just like, like, what is it? You can think about it, but like, until you find it, utility inquiry found it for me. Yeah. But anyway, so go ahead in terms of, because you, I know you want to say more about the utility of believing you're an addict and the other gaslighting that goes on from there.
Well, that was, I mean, that was a, I think I was rereading Eckhart at that point too, and I just saw the passage where he said, we unconsciously believe that our suffering serves us in some way or something along those lines. And I just was like, yeah, God. So maybe that explains why my system always reverts back, defaults back to the suffering,
Yeah.
And that's when I came to you and I said, I think I said something like, I think, we're not suffering. We're never really suffering in a vacuum. We're never really suffering for no reason.
Yeah.
And let's test it and see, because we had just developed the reverse inquiry, which was the way of like challenging beliefs and provoking up beliefs in the body. So I just said, I don't need to suffer. And my body just like leapt. It was just like, oh, yes, I do. Like, I have to, I need to, and then started listing all the reasons. But anyways, that was to me, that was the transition towards the repression work, was looking at was, how is the suffering or how's the gaslighting or believing things or
Yeah.
how's that serving us?
Well, real quick on that, because like I need to suffer. I remember saying, and then I sat with that, and then we were already seeing how through utility inquiry, we stay safe by suffering, and it made sense. Oh yeah, I need to. Suffering keeps me safe. You know, and we put that together.
Yeah. And then the question was safe from what?
Exactly. Go ahead.
So I mean, come to find out, for you and I, it's just buried anger. It's just rage buried in the body, mine, in my stomach, and my legs, yours, and your spine. And maybe, yeah, maybe you can talk about, well, we can talk about how the relationships kind of brought that up even more in a bit, but I know you want to talk about the non-dual stuff too. So.
Yeah, well, after we developed the first like version of KI, which hadn't gotten to emotional repression, Dan and I were both in relationships, and people have heard my stories. So, well, yeah, explain that, because that was actually part of the development. Because you know, when we got into these new relationships, both our hurt and sadness repressors. So, yeah, take it from there, Dan. I think you can.
Totally. Yeah. Well, so Dana, who is my wife now, we got married in 2022.
Awesome.
But she was a girl I had a crush on in high school. And so, right, I don't know, it was around 2019 or something, I reached out to her on Facebook. I saw her and I just said, "Hey, do you want to hang out or talk or whatever?" And we started to, and that was kind of the beginning of my decision to move back to Florida, which I did. But now we're getting into these relationships with folks that we find out eventually are, like Scott said, hurt repressors, and that start to get angry with us about stuff. Because you and I didn't get angry with each other about anything, because we're good boys. So
Yeah,
we were
exactly.
kind of trauma bonded in that way.
We were, and I guess we needed them in a way. I think about it, it's like, well, we needed that, like, because it's all consciousness. We needed that in our relationships because we were already exploring repression, but hadn't gotten to the root. And then it's like, what do they say? Relationship is your best teacher. So there you go. Well, so in terms of the gaslighting, that's how I discovered myself, how I had the chronic pain, because I've been gaslighting myself my whole life around buried anger. So, and then here it showed up. So how, if once you discovered that, or we discovered that allowed us to develop repression inquiry. So how is that change things, I guess, first in the relationship, because the gaslighting thing really is relevant in romantic relationships. I think we've both seen that. Yeah, let's say some more things about that, because they were hurt and sadness repressors, we're anger repressors, so it was like strong shadows. And the way I saw that was every time he would get angry, I wanted to make it about his anger or his response, because that kept me safe from my buried anger, again, gaslighting myself. And I would even make it about his anger, you know, sometimes, and not be conscious of that, not seeing that as a trauma response for him. Not that he that should give him a pass for any behavior. I'm just saying I was hiding from my buried anger in that. So can you say something about that too?
I mean, mine was, it's kind of gross actually what I did at first, because I remember coming into the relationship and just, I was actually more honest than I've ever been at the beginning of any relationship with her, I think, which was good. But I was still gaslighting myself, into thinking that I was a really empathetic, compassionate, spiritual person, And so that's what I presented to her at first, which of course, I was pretty good at it. I was a pretty good actor, I guess. And I mean, that to highlight the anger repression stuff with that, it's like I did that with her at the beginning to get love, so that she'd be like, "Wow, this guy's great. He's so sensitive, and he's so, different than other guys, aka different than his dad,
Yeah, God, we say so much, because there's another thing that people like you and I have gone through a real transformation around anger repression. And I know a lot about you and you about me around that. Not only personal relationships, but like when I think about how you and I were at the center with people, because we hadn't gotten to our anger repression. Those are other relationships. And even though we were earnest, like we weren't there yet, just like so many like practitioners and people aren't there. And that affected even like how we were with, well, anybody who has buried anger, how it is with people that you're helping. So can I also want you just to see how those are, can you explain how those are tied for you? Because they are for me. It's like how I related to was how I related to everyone. It's just that was getting angry at me and other people weren't. Can you say anything about that?
Yeah, I can say a lot about that probably. Yeah. Oh man. So the helping and the caretaking and all that. Yeah, that was my impulse because that's part for me. That's part of being a good boy, you know, or a good person. You
Totally.
know, it's someone
That's
that helps and fixes and saves and holds space for and you know all this stuff. But covertly. What both of us found in the emotional pressure work is that I was doing that to get my needs met, actually, for a really deep level. It's like I have to do all this, I have to be the good person or the good boy to get the people that I'm taking care of to love me, you know, or to ex or to accept me or to keep me safe by not getting angry, you know. And I did that in a couple of my friendships too, where it was like, I'm gonna nice you to death, basically, so you don't get angry with me.
Yeah,
You know?
it's that simple, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that way even when we're helping people. That's what I was saying. Or even our romantic relationships when we have buried anger and people don't always connect the two because it's so unconscious. But like there we were helping people like so many helpers. And then we had relationships. We're kind of doing the same thing in both places, just nicing people to death and then killing ourselves in the meantime or getting sick, staying sick.
Yeah, so much so that I think we let, we, well, I don't talk too much about the organization, but we really like people pleased in the organization and kind of from our anger repression, just let it get out of control, let it go in a direction that we didn't want it to go in. You know?
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, but that was the direction our whole lives had been going, you know. You think about it was like this freight train when you have trauma, it's like it's driving everything. And then I think we just finally also kind of started to wake up to it and saw, oh, this freight train has just been rolling, you know. And then we, because we were doing our own work, it felt like we had to like change it, didn't we? We had to open to create something different. Well, I don't want to get into all that yet because there's more to the relationship and we were just getting started. But I just keep saying how, just showing how it affects everything. That's what I always want to show to people, how it all has like one source, believe it or not, or very, it's not just one source, but it's like, because we hold back quite a few things. Well, can I ask you that, Dan? So why is it that you're not then a hurt and sadness repressor? Because in culturally, isn't that what's really underneath it all? Can I ask you that?
So yeah, well, that's a I, to me that's like a pretty common understanding, like in the clinical and the therapeutic and psychological paradigm, you know, that people will say, well, it's all about people are just hurt, you know, deep down that there's a lot of stuff around, well, you know, and that's what's under the anger, that's what's
Yeah.
beneath the anger, you know.
Right.
And maybe, you know, typically I think it's kind of viewed like, well, are men mainly the hurt repressors and women the anger repressors?
Right.
Which I, you know, the more I work with people, the more I'm like, that's really kind of not, it's not, I mean, I'm an anger repressor, I know, and my wife is a hurt repressor. So, and I meet more and more where it kind of busts that myth. But the other myth of it is, yeah, that hurts the deepest thing. And, you know, prior to coming to the center and to meeting you and to being even like as we were in the hot tub, I was working with so much grief and sadness and you know how many times I like wept and stuff and it
Yeah.
was right. And prior to that, even about since 2010 when I was in Al-Anon, I just really learned how to cry and be open and
Yeah, just like me. I did that earlier in my life. I told people that that's why I came to non-duality, to take care of that stuff and kind of, you know, I didn't understand it was buried anger, but I know that's where you're going.
yeah,
Go
exactly.
ahead.
And so for us, like if we really check, and yeah, I know if I check my body, it's like, well, can I show people my sadness? Can I show people my hurt? And there's my body's like, you know, I don't love doing that, you know, but I can't. It's way safer to show
Yeah.
up as sad, hurt, scared, you know.
Exactly.
And so when I checked the anger, that was the big hit. I mean, I think at some point, I don't know if you remember this, but you were like talking about anger oppression, and I think I just was like, I don't feel like I'm angry though.
Yeah.
You know?
Why would
Like,
you?
yeah. And how would I know if I had buried anger and repressed
Yeah,
anger?
exactly.
But the more I checked, the more the body just reacted. I was like, well, apparently I am. My body is really, really fucking angry. You know, it has been
Yeah.
for a long time. But anyways, so yeah, I think there's a prejudice about that, about the hurts at the bottom of everything, you know, fruit on the bottom, hurt on the bottom.
Yeah, that's why I said because we were talking about relationship, and like that's the reason that you were attracted to your wife, and I was attracted to her in large part. It was so energetic, in large part from childhood. We were opposites, not just male, female. I was in a gay relationship. It's really trauma. It's like more like, you know, I showed up as this good and peaceful in my own way, and you showed up in your own, as you explained it. And then they were different. So can you explain how you and your wife are different so people can see that even it's not just different at the repression level, it actually shows up differently.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you know what's funny? The first thing I noticed was she's terrified of death and people dying. You know? And I was like,
Yes,
it's really interesting. You know, I was like, because I don't have, I mean, I don't like it when people have died and I am sad and I cry, but man, she's really freaked out about this. And as soon as she's kind of coming into the work more too, and as soon as she started saying that she represses hurt and grief and sadness, it made complete sense. It was like, oh, okay. Well, you're actually afraid of feeling the buried grief that's in your body. That's what you're afraid of, you know?
Yeah, and by the way, I have no judgment of any of this because we all have repression and trauma. So when we talk about these people that we've loved deeply, and so that's we don't, yeah, and yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, totally. And well, and so that was the first thing. And then I started to notice too, like as we spent more time in the relationship together, that she would, when she was triggered, that she would get angry or, you know, more irritable or frustrated, or she would, you know, I always sort of describe like it's like the hurt repressor gets big
Yeah.
when they're triggered, and the anger repressor gets small, which makes sense, you know, because they don't want to feel the small stuff and we don't want to feel the big stuff, you know.
It's that simple. Yeah. So, yeah, I know. So, like, did you find yourself like dealing with triggers differently once we developed? I know you would say yes, but how would you explain that? Like, because I know that when you get a relationship like that, people can trigger each other because of the shadows, you know? So, how does that differ between how we used to do inquiry, early KI, and then repression inquiry in your relationship, processing things?
Yeah, the way it's different is that, like, I realized since I know now, and I've done so much work around my anger repression, and I know that that's what I am repressing. I'll just realize in a relationship if I'm triggered, if I get triggered by her, that at some level, I'm angry and afraid of it, you know.
Yeah.
In my body, I know that whatever the trigger is, whatever I'm believing, which to bring it back to the gaslight thing, is. If I start believing something like I don't know, there's so many different landings. It could be I'm unsafe, or
Yeah.
she hates me, or whatever it is that I start. If I know if I start gaslighting myself and believing things and suffering, that what's really happening is at some level I'm angry and afraid of it, but my system won't let me get to that yet.
Yeah,
You know.
totally. Can I ask you a question here and see what comes up? Because this is what's coming up for me is, like, if you look at, okay, well, you didn't even know me when I was in college, but when I've told this story when I would fall in love. You know who they are because we've done inquiry on it. You know these names. I don't name the people, but like falling in love and then like feeling really hurt, and sometimes I could name a name right now and you'd say, oh yeah, him, but like crying and feeling so hurt by it, and even one time crying there with him, and through and I know now where identification with that hurt and sadness and woundedness came from. It came from the buried anger. I mean, like when I would be crying with some of those people or feeling that hurt, underneath, now I know I was raging at them because it was a childhood trauma. I was re-experiencing a trauma of like, you rejected me, so I'm angry at you, but I can't express it, and so I'm going to be vulnerable so I can keep your love, you know, and stay safe. So what, how, what have you learned about, like, because I think people should hear this around how it's not really, you said it this way, it's not that hurt is always under anger. Sometimes anger is under hurt. And I would add, yeah, because at the basis of it's all fear, whatever we had to be afraid of the whole time. So what would you say about your experience with more about like how vulnerability is more on the surface, and then I don't know how that changed for you.
Well, I think it changed in that now it's like the more I come out of my anger oppression in my relationship, and frankly, with all my relationships in my life, friendships and family and stuff, I feel closer to people. I feel more intimate. That's my, as an anger oppressor, that's my vulnerability is being able to show my anger, my power, my sexuality, my all the stuff that I push down, you know, it's not the sort of false vulnerability that I was presenting before from my anger oppression, like you were talking about, you know. And so, yeah, it's just, it feels like coming back to life. It feels like coming back into, like, you know, I'm a,
Well, when I think back at the times when I was being vulnerable with people on the surface with the buried anger, it's such actually a wall of separation. You know, you can't see it when you have until you process buried emotions. But like when you go back, I bet you can see it. I know you're talking about how KI has changed it a lot. It has totally changed it for me too. But can you go back and see? Because I think that's what people, they don't understand, is that just because somebody's showing vulnerable emotions doesn't mean there's authenticity there. And until you get to the thing that's behind everything, the core fear, then you can't really see it. Anything else you can say about that?
yeah, I mean, I think it's like, it's funny because Dana actually got really good, because Dana was raised, my wife was raised by an anger repressor mainly. And I won't say, I don't want to talk about the who it is, but she was raised, and she told me one time, she said, I always had this suspicion that that this person's sort of victimhood or victim consciousness that they felt like they lived in was not real. You know, that it was like sort of a front or something. And that's definitely, but I think that's my, you know, no coincidence that she got married to me. Because I really think mine was too. And that's what, and I talked to you a lot about that too. And we use those terms, just like I would say, I feel like I'm stuck in this like victim consciousness where I always have to play small and I can't, you know, I can't be in my power and all this stuff. And then you start doing the anger oppression work, it's like, well, that's why, you know.
That's a really good thing, because we're talking about gaslighting to go to next. Like, because you, this has been a huge topic for you and me, and we haven't always talked about it publicly because it's a sensitive topic. But victim consciousness, if people could understand that we've come from it, like, you know, like when you bury anger from a very early age, that's just totally off limits, and so that can easily just feel like the world is against you, and it's just safer to believe it. And you can never really break that shell, that egg open, and see where it's really coming from until you do what you just said. I mean, do work to see it. That, what would you say to the people out there right now who are shaking their head left and right and saying, no, my victim story has nothing to do with either emotional repression or especially even buried anger, because it's so common in KI. What would you say to them now that we're talking about it more?
I mean, I would say check, you know. I would say if you're open to it, check, because I didn't check. I mean, I didn't check for 35 years, you know. And it just deep the suffering just kind of deepened, even though there were things along the way that it brought some relief, it would always come back to that, you know. So check the body and you know, I'll just tell you from my experience. like I said, I didn't think I was angry at all. And then I started asking these questions of my body, and my body disagreed heavily
Yeah,
with
exactly.
that, you know?
Yeah. The right questions. But yeah. Yeah, because that's another thing. What is there anything you want to say about that? Because I've talked about that too. Is like you can't feel the anger or the buried hurt or the buried sadness. So if you start, even when you say go down into the body, it's not like we're going to feel it, but it's those questions, isn't it? That matters too. Yeah. Anything else on that? Just processing to help people understand that.
I think, I mean, there's some ways that if you look at your life and if you, there's symptoms, right, for each sort of dominant repression, which would either be you're repressing anger and big emotions like that, or you're repressing vulnerable stuff like hurt, sadness, grief. And there's symptoms that show up in your life. Like most anger repressors that I've worked with and that I know are people that are people pleasers or helpers, or I mean, there's a lot of different indicators. I'm trying to think of some more.
Yeah, well, just like always quiet or always nice or just pr consistently that way is usually what I say is with repression, look for chronic, persistent, because nothing in life is actually permanent if you think about it. And so, like, those persistent types of like just archetypes in our world that are not ever angry and never big, that's a really big pot, is what I always tell people.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Anything else on victim consciousness before we leave? We should just do a podcast episode on that, I think.
That should be the next one. That's a lot. There's a lot of material on that,
Yeah. Well, okay. So, I guess I want to say bring it back to relationship and the work, though. Because how did that show up in your relationship? Victim consciousness. Because that's to me, it's like almost any kind of self-limiting belief where we deny our power. We might not even call it victim. We just feel a certain way about ourselves. Okay, you know that feeling, right? That, yeah. So how has that changed with KI getting to buried anger?
I think here's something. So this was prior to my relationship with Dana, but I definitely got hooked into the whole online war or debate, or whatever, of the narcissist versus the empath, you know. And so that's definitely something that has fallen by the wayside, because the narcissist and the empath, I mean, that feels like those are both great identities to hide in, you know. And that's what I would do, is I would say, you know, I, you know, the narcissist is out there and they're manipulating and they're calculating and they're abusive and they're hungry for power, and you know, but I'm the sensitive, empathic, kind, spiritual person, and you know, different from them. But the thing that the way that's changed is I realized, oh, what really happened was I had the all the traits of the narcissist buried in my body. You know what I mean? It was like the people that I called the narcissist, you know, it was like that's my that was you know, I basically, I mean, if you're going to use that language, I would say I was a covert narcissist for sure, you know.
Yeah, totally. It's almost like if you explain it this way, it's like it's all safety, the need for safety. So it's like if dad was angry, like you said, or I had the bullies, then that's an energetic thing. And so anything that kind of comes close to it, we have to bury and then we have to kind of be against it out there. So it's not just, you know, it's a whole bunch of things, narcissist, authority, you know, bad boy, any bully, dad archetype, anything like that, wouldn't you say?
Totally. The dad, and the flip of it, for the it made started to make sense with doing the repression work, and I realized, oh, the hurt repressor, the reason that bullies target people that are weak is because they're afraid of their weakness. You know what I mean? They're terrified of their vulnerability. So they shadow it and they see it in these people. So there's the war, right? And so as you come out of repression, it's like I start to go, these people that I thought were bullies or narcissists or people that I looked at as authorities that were unjust or unfair authorities, you know? It just does it. As my anger and my power comes back online, they look totally different. Some of them might even, I'm like, oh, I kind of like this person.
Yeah.
I like their energy. I like their style. But anyways, it just changes because I'm able to show up.
Yeah. It's almost, I was going to say, like, you're talking about traits in a way, like, even with you and your wife or relationships, but just traits like we have to be the good ones, the empathic ones, the compassionate ones, and never angry, never anything big. Or so, what have you seen about? Because as people listen to you, they might think, well, so Dan's just really angry now. Is he abusive? I don't understand. But if you can you tell people what your relationship is like? Because you'd mentioned intimacy. That's a hard one for people to get, that I work with my buried anger and then the fear of intimacy starts dissolving. Can you explain that in your own words?
I mean, I think it's because the more that I make the repression, which is really fear in the body, like repression, the mechanism of repression is frozen fear that's in the body. And so the more that I make that conscious, the more that I'm naturally able to show up. Because I used to feel like effort, like I have to really effort to be myself in the situation. I have to effort and, really be authentic and all this stuff. And I realized, well, that's why it's sort of a what's the word for it? Like a oxymoron that I have to try to be authentic. It's kind of like, okay, well.
Well, I just think that's an anxiety, going to produce anxiety to try, isn't it? More anxiety. Yeah, okay, I'm gonna ask you, okay, you finish there. I have a couple questions for you, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it just becomes more of a natural state of being because it's like your the fear in the body is being made conscious, so you're just able to show up more. And coming out of your oppression, I don't rage on people, just because I'm clearing the body of the old anger, but I am more decisive and I'm more direct and and that just it just feels like I'm showing up more emotionally honest, and that feels like that's what the intimacy is. It's letting people see my full, expression for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's another thing is you said showing up, you keep saying showing up. 'Cause when you have buried anger, you can't do it. In different ways we can't do it. Whether we procrastinate or, we have some anxiety or depression as a result of it, or just like in relationship, like you're saying, like I've even noticed with myself is like I couldn't listen, but I always prided myself on being a good listener. But that was an identity connected to the buried anger because I've learned that listening involves speaking up, and if you have buried anger, you can't speak up. So you have to sit there and monitor that unconsciously. And so I just wondered anything else like that that you've found, like insights around being more authentic, so that people don't just imagine, oh, we just become angry in the end, because there's so much more to it. It's so rich, actually.
Yeah, I just think it's more. It just feels like becoming yourself, really becoming yourself again, like really, because you're stopping self-gaslighting. Like progressively, it's like the gaslighting slows down and it stops because we don't need to gaslight ourselves anymore. We don't need
Yeah.
to land on these identities and to believe things about ourselves or the world or other people because we're able to show up as who we are more and more, because, I just think of like a little kid. Like if you watch a really little kid, they're just so natural, or an animal or something, they're just so natural that it feels more and more like that because, the artifice is kind of like being burned away. So
Very well said. All right, so I got a few last-minute questions for you that I have answered on here, but I'm just so glad that the co-developer KI is here for you to answer. Are you ready?
yeah, pretty.
Okay, Dan and Scott, but it's for Dan today. Why do you focus on emotional repression all the time on your social media posts?
Because that's what everybody is already focused on, but they don't realize it yet.
Yeah.
just think because that's what most people are doing most of the time in their lives, and that's what's
Yeah.
it. That's sort of it's. I mean, it's the root of suffering, really. It's the unless we find some new information. It just feels like when we do the work with people, it's like that it takes them there, and that's the route, you know. So.
Yeah. Thank you. And then here's another question is, this is more for me, but I've been trying to explain and people get it, I think mostly, but how, I know you've had this experience where you have relationships, but you use spiritual process to kind of deal with that and manage it. But this has been different in the sense that it gets brought in fully and it really changes relationship. Can you say anything about that? I know you already have, but the difference between like using processes to kind of manage triggers, versus br bringing something fully in to our lives and relationships.
Well, I think the difference between the processes I used to do versus the process of AI and emotional impression work is it becomes more about expression. And those other processes, it was like I was questioning my thoughts, like, or I was meditating, or I was, doing whatever practice or modality I was doing so that I could. I didn't know this, but I was doing that so that I could stay anger repressed, so that I could stay safe and repressed, And and that just stopped working after a while for me. I think it was just a point, when we started to develop repression work where I was like, this isn't working for me, like I'm still really suffering, and what's the deal? I still have this contraction in my belly, so what gives, And and the repression work is like there's a, and maybe you can say more about this, but there's an inner, most of those practices were like an inner practice, like something I do on my own inside. But this is like I'm doing that part, and then I'm doing the external part too, which is going out into the world, into the relationships, and expressing and showing people parts that, I hid for so long. So.
Yeah, because I think that's what a lot of people are seeing with KI, I hope, is that it's almost like we have to use a process to survive the relationships until they're better, until we can show up there, and when we can, and when it feels. This is what I've also been saying is that this has been hard for me to articulate. I'm not reading it from a book anywhere, is that the reason that we always felt unsafe and that we. A lot of people don't know that they need safety from others, but I say, look, if you're an anger repressor, you don't want people, you can't p let people get angry. You'll do a lot of things to make sure it doesn't happen. And that's a need for safety and a need for love and approval that actually you more and more find that within, truthfully, not just as a mental concept, like a spiritual concept, but this is energetic work. And you actually find out why you felt so afraid and why you needed safety and why you felt like there's something wrong with you and you needed people to love you. Can you say anything about that? Because people get afraid of this work. They don't know where it goes, and I'm trying to help them understand by other people experience, expressing their experience like you.
So the that's part, I mean, that's part of the beauty of this too, is I think it's like you've talked about it in this way, and I like to use this language, Scott, but it's like that the resources that I denied myself for most of my life, for me, I mean, that was 39, 40 years of denying myself the resource of anger, power, sexuality. Like that part was just online. It's like I always say to people, it's like I buried half of myself for 40 years. You know what I mean? It was like it was just
Yeah.
there. So as that part comes online, then it's like I'm bringing those resources back into consciousness, and then it's like, oh, like I said earlier, it's like I'm. You can flow more, and it's almost like that's. I was always looking to other people to meet my needs because I couldn't meet the need that I had in myself of accessing the stuff, accessing the, stuff that was offline. And so by doing the repression work, it's like really meeting my own needs,
Yeah.
like really deeply meeting my own needs. And then, I think it was Anthony DeMello where he says like a healthy child isn't interested in persons. He just wants to go explore the world. He's not neurotic. He's not hanging around his mom's skirt, and he's not, and
Right. Nor is he avoiding relationship. It's like healthy, Yeah. That's good. Okay, so that's a good place to end it. All right. Dan, will you promise you'll come back now that we know how to do a podcast together?
Yeah, I promise you.
All right. I want to tell everybody listening, I'll put a link in the description. I'm not sure what link will be there. I've been sitting here with that, but I want you guys to have access to Dan, to come talk to him. And, he works with people every day, just like I do. And many people don't know that. So I'll probably put something. Any last minute words, Dan, other than give KI a try if you're open?
Yeah, I mean, just thanks if you've listened to the whole thing. Thanks for being here. Yeah, yeah, just check, like we were saying earlier, just check. You know what I mean? If you still have suffering happening, just check and see if it could be related to their emotions. You know, and you can do that by working with us.
Yeah, because it takes skill. That's another
Yeah.
thing. It really does. Okay. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it. Love you.
Love you.
Bye.